Drink alcoholic. My sobriety day is February 8th, 2011. And it kind of blows me away. I had to keep like counting the years in my head because I'm like, I don't know how I have 3 years sober, you know? I've done like so many wrong things in sobriety. But lately I've been doing a lot of service work and praying and at least calling my sponsor. I don't always take his direction. You know, I usually don't, but I call him sometimes. And I just recently switched sponsors, you know, and I really respect this guy, and he's been around for a long time. And, you know, I think he works a pretty good program. And, you know, I feel like I can be honest with him, and he's got a pretty dope story. So here you go, Dave.
David Alcoholic. And my sobriety date is November 10th, 2002. This is my home group. I have a sponsor and I sponsor others. And Jake refers to me as a sponsor. You know, he wouldn't know by checking my phone records, but yeah, he does. He actually has been calling me sometimes whenever him and his girlfriend are fighting, you know, but I can totally relate to that, you know, because I did that for a lot of years, you know. But, you know, it's, I hate speaking, you know, but I, you know, anything AA asks of me to do, you know, and, it's awesome to be able to celebrate to, you know, or speak for Jake while he's celebrating, you know, see him get 3 years and, you know, Mike, who's celebrating later, definitely didn't think this guy would be celebrating 10 years either today, you know, but, you know, it's awesome, getting to do stuff like this with my closest friends and, wow, it's a little early for that, but, you know, but that's the life that I got from AA. And if you would have told me 11 years ago that that's what my life would be like today, you would have had to pick up a white chip, you know? You know, I got here and, I didn't like it here. I wasn't shy about letting people know that, you know, and I didn't think I belonged here. You know, I did a lot of drugs, you know, before I got here. And I, you know, no matter how bad things got, with my drinking and stuff, I would have told you, I was fighting it till the end, you know, the drugs were the problem. And even though when I got here through a methadone clinic. And, you know, so I hadn't been doing drugs for a long time, just that, you know. And my life has been steadily getting worse. And I remember having that argument with my sponsor. And, you know, I would tell him all the time, you know, I don't belong in AA. And his response would always be the same. He would always say, maybe you'll hear something today, you know. And then one day I did, you know, I came to the meeting and I heard this guy, George Jim, talk and he talked about all the drugs he did and stuff like that. But he talked about why that made him alcoholic, you know, and then in exploring my drinking and stuff, you know, it's very clear the pattern of when I drink, you know, because I learned very early that my reaction to alcohol was a lot different from anything else that I did. And whenever I did, got stuck in my mouth, sorry. whenever I was doing drugs, it was very predictable. It was always exactly the same. You know, if I was doing coke, I was locking myself in the bathroom. You know, if I was shooting dope, I would just sit on the couch and nod in and out. You know, if I was smoking weed, I would just laugh a lot and eat a lot, you know. But when I drank, it was always a roll of the dice, you know. Sometimes I'd be fine. We'd have a good time, and other times, you know, people would be like, bro, get out of here, you know. And I could never stop. I would drink until I either passed out or there was no alcohol, you know, and I didn't have that same reaction with drugs. And that's something I had to discover when I was here. I remember right before I got here, you know, and I hadn't been doing any drugs or anything. And I remember going out with my brother a couple of times and we went to this pool hall and I was taking the glass and still, you know, my only problem was drugs, you know, but I'm like filling the glass up with the pitcher and I'm chugging it. Setting it down, filling it up, chugging it. I did that 3 times. Everybody was getting mad. They're like, what the hell, man? And but that's what I had to do. You know, I had to do that if I was sober, you know. And I had to get as wasted as I could as fast as I could. You know, that was always the deal. You know, so I got here, and I was at the methadone clinic, and my counselor kept telling me I should go to a meeting. And, you know, years before that happened, I got arrested on a drug charge. And the program I was in, they told me I had to go to meetings, and they told me that I couldn't come here because I wouldn't be accepted here. That was just the experience I had with the counselor I had. They said I needed to go to the other program. And I went there, and I just sat in the meetings, you know, and I felt like I couldn't relate. I felt like I was better than everybody that was there. And I, you know, so when she suggested that I come here, I was like, that's crazy. I was like, first of all, we're at the methadone clinic, so why would I go to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know? But she kept pushing it. And one day I was sitting in her office, and she's like, promise me. She gave me this guy's number. I said, call him. He's going to pick you up. And I said, I was like, all right, I'll call him. And at this time, you know, I was living in a one-bedroom apartment. I'd been stealing electricity for like 3 months. I had a dog that somebody asked me to babysit for the weekend. I had him for 9 years. I had him at the time. And I had a five-pound bag of rice, and that's what him and I used to eat all the time. You know, things weren't going very good, you know. The only reason I had electricity is because they would come and turn it off, and I would go back out there and turn it on, you know, myself. And then what happened was they took the meter away after, like, 2 months of me doing that. So I stole a meter from somebody else from another apartment that was abandoned, and I was using that. But that, they'll evict you immediately if you get caught, because I had a friend. That's how I learned it, you know. I had a friend that happened to. So what I would do is I would take the meter and I would bring it inside in the morning at like 6 in the morning. And I would have no electricity all day. And then at like 8 o'clock when I figure, you know, Tampa Electric has gone home for the day, I would go out and I would plug it back in. But it's like July, you know, and I have this dog that's peeing and crapping all over the carpet and stuff like that. It was, I don't know how I lived that way, you know, but it was okay. You know, I was okay. I was cool with having air conditioning to go to sleep with, you know, that was good. And, you know, so that's what my life was like when I got here. And so I was way too busy to go to meetings. And, I was going home from the methadone clinic, and I would lay on the couch all day until nighttime. And then I would find people to drink with at night, you know, because I wasn't going to be sober all the time. You know, the methadone didn't get me wasted, so I had to do something. And that last day, I was about to walk out of her office, and she said, hold on a second. And she picked up the phone, and she said, the person that answered the phone, and she said, hey, I got somebody here who wants to go to a meeting. Hold on. And she gave me the phone. And, you know, that was like the moment my life changed. And this guy got on the phone, and he was super energetic. He was like, hey, man, you want to go to a meeting tonight? That's awesome. I'll come pick you up. And I was like, what? You know, like, really? And I didn't really think he was going to come and get me, so I told him where I lived. You know, if I'd known he was going to come, I wouldn't have done that. But I told him where I lived, and he said he was going to be there at 5 o'clock. At 5:05, he wasn't there, so I was super happy. Then, like, at 5:06, he knocked on the door, and I was super pissed. And, you know, so I went out, and I went to the meeting with him, and I remember us driving around, and we stopped at somebody else's house, and then we went to the meeting. It was this group, and it was when we met at the other church. And I remember during the meeting, there was like, one guy there who was, like, 60, and everybody else was my age. And he was speaking. And it was like a lead in an open discussion. And I remember being in that meeting, and nobody said a word the entire time. And the other meetings that I was going to, you know, everybody was talking and, like, on their phones and stuff like that. But this meeting, everybody sat and listened to this guy. And it was really weird. I was like, man, this is like some Charles Manson stuff. You know what I mean? Like, everybody was so into this guy, you know? And after the meeting, I remember my counselor was there, which was really strange. But she told me her dad was in Al-Anon. Or she was in Al-Anon because her dad was an alcoholic, so I thought maybe she'd like to check out meetings or whatever. And so she's, like, introducing me to people. She knew everybody there, and she, like, introduced me. This guy came up to me and said, hey, man, you got a sponsor? And I was like, no. And she was like, oh, you should talk to him. And I was like, yeah, whatever, you know, I'm not going to come back here. Why would I get a sponsor? And that guy came back over again, like, 5 minutes later. I was like, did you get a sponsor yet? And, like, I'm still standing in the same spot. Why, you know, no. And I didn't get a sponsor that night, but, you know, I went back to the meeting like 2 weeks later, and she was there again, and I'm like, that's really weird. Like, she keeps telling me to come here, and then she keeps showing up here. What's up with that? But that same guy, like, three times that night, you get a sponsor yet? You get a sponsor? I'm like, do you want to do it? You know what I mean? Like, you seem pretty excited about this thing. So, you know, he said, he goes, yeah, well, let me ask you this. He goes, I got a couple questions for you. Are you willing to go any lengths to stay sober? And I was like, you know, no, you know, but I knew if I said that, he probably wouldn't sponsor me, and I wanted to at least be able to be like, that guy's my sponsor, like Jake does. And love you, buddy. But so I was like, so I lied and I said, yeah, I can, I'm willing to go any lengths to stay sober. And then he said, can you follow direction? And I really, already? Seriously? And I was like, yeah, sure. And I lied, and I said, yeah. And, you know, if from that day going forward, he would pick me up every day, you know. If he couldn't, he had somebody come over to my house and get me. And I hated it because I hated AA. I hated being in meetings. I hated being around people. in AA, and I wasn't shy about it too, but no matter how much of a jerk off I was, people would always be like, do you want to come tomorrow? And they would always be willing to come pick me up, you know, and I didn't understand it. And, you know, I was coming to meetings, I was on methadone, and my sponsor would let me count my time. So I'd be like, they counted it as like negative time. So like when I had 3 months before I got off, they were like, you're negative 3 months sober. Then it was like, you're negative 2 months sober. And then all the way down, you know, until I actually got sober. And I remember right before I got sober, I started hanging out with this girl. And, you know, she had 90 days. So I was like, she really knows what's up. You know what I mean? She knows what's going on. So her and I started hanging out all the time. But she was like super resentful at everybody in the group and stuff. And then I started becoming that way. And one day I was just like, you know what, screw it, you know, I'm going to go out. I kept having to sit in the back seat, you know, when new guys were coming. I'm like, I've been here for months doing service work and stuff, you know, because the way we do it in my sponsorship family is whoever has the most time gets the front seat. And so even when a guy would come in and pick up a white chip, he had more time than me. And I remember and I remember arguing with my sponsor one day after the meeting. I'm like, what the hell, man? And he was like, you're high right now. He's like, you're nodding out during the meeting. You know what I mean? Like, just pick up some chairs. And so I was super resentful, and this one night, me and this girl are hanging out, you know, and I was like, you know what, I'm going out tonight, and so you should probably go home. And she's like, no, I want to go, and I was like, no, I'm going out tonight. And she's like, yeah, I want to come. I'm like, okay, whatever. So I went and met up with some of my old friends, and I brought her with me, and, you know, they rolled the blunt and started passing it around, and then, you know, we got the beer, and we opened it, and I remember, I didn't think it was a big deal that I started drinking, but when she opened her beer, she goes, 90 days of sobriety down the drain. And she just started drinking, and I just knew that was so wrong, you know what I mean, and that I shouldn't be a part of that, you know, regardless of what I was doing. And, you know, so I didn't hang out with her very much anymore after that. And then one of the opportunities that I had because, you know, of my situation when I got here was I got to watch a lot of people, you know, in AA. And I would see guys come in, and they would just be done, you know, and they would come in, and they'd be excited about AA, and they would get sponsors, and they would do step work. And their lives would get better, you know. And then I would see people that would come in like me who had crappy attitudes, didn't want to do service work, you know, just made fun of everybody who did that stuff. And that's what I did. You know, my closest running buddies, we'd sit in the back of the meeting and make fun of everybody, you know. And those guys aren't here today, you know. And so I got to notice, like, the people who would stay and the people who wouldn't and what they did, you know. And a week before I got off methadone, I remember it was November 5th of 2002. And I decided I better get it out of my system if I'm gonna really take sobriety sober or sobriety seriously. So I went, you know, I called my brother and we went and got some stuff, or I got some stuff and I went to his house. We got in an argument and I went to leave with it, and he tried to stop me from leaving. And I'm outside in the parking lot and he grabbed me to keep me from going, and I grabbed him and I slammed him up against his truck and I was choking him. It was like 10 o'clock in the morning and we were making noise, so people were outside. I look up and there's people outside on the balcony, like, watching this go down. And I was like, man, this is crazy. So I ran inside and we calmed down, and then we go to do it, you know, and I'm standing there and I'm like shooting up, and I got this needle hanging out of my arm, and I hear this voice just as clear as I can hear my own right now. And it said, your life is always going to be this way. And that was like, it was such a horrible feeling. You know what I mean? Because I knew that was true. I knew that was the truth. That was the way my life was always going to be. And I went to the meeting that night, and I told my sponsor, you know, what was going on and stuff. And, you know, he didn't want me to work a four-step until I got sober. So I took my last dose of methadone on November 10th. 13 days after that, we were doing my fifth step. You know what I mean? He was like, he was like, you got to get to work, man. You know, so we started doing the work, and, you know, and things got better pretty quick, you know, and, I had a car, I had a job, I was happy, you know, kind of. I still didn't really like AA that much, and I still struggle with the fact that I fit in, you know. And but we went, I remember that I had 30 days, I'm sitting in the meeting, and none of my friends are there. I got off work late, so I had to go to a meeting by myself, and I was pissed that nobody showed up. I had 30 days, like, really, nobody showed up? You know, I'm sitting in the meeting, and I decided during the meeting that I didn't really need AA anymore. I was like, you know, life is good. You know, I'm paying for my electricity now. You know, it's on legally. You know, the dog hasn't crapped in the house in like a week. And, you know, so I was like, I'm done. I made the decision I was done after the meet. Well, that I was done right then, and I was going to get up and leave. But I remember my sponsor one time yelling at me for leaving a meeting before it was over. And so I was like, all right, I'll wait till the end, and then I'm not coming back. And at the end, they gave out the chips, and this lady got up, and she got her your chip, and they asked her how she did it at the end. And she said, it took me 4 years to get this chip. If you're new, don't leave before the miracle happens. And, you know, that was, like, really powerful. It was like she was talking directly at me, you know what I mean, when that happened. And so I went home that night, and my phone rang at, like, 11 o'clock, and it was my friends from AA. And they were all, like, congratulating me on having 30 days. Ah, stop. And they were passing the phone around, you know what I mean? And it was awesome. And that was, like, just, you know, one of those things that happens that helps me come back one more day, you know. And I got really involved in service work for a long time, you know. But what I would do is I would do tons of service work. And at first I was doing it. Well, really the reason I started doing it was because I hated my sponsor and I wanted to change. And I knew everybody would judge me if I just changed sponsors. And I heard a guy who I really respected in AA with like 40 years say the only reason he would ever change sponsors is if he drank, died, or was less active than him in AA. So I was like, well, that's what I'll do. I'll be more active than he is in AA. And so I started doing tons of service work, but I could never beat him. You know what I mean? My sponsor is just crazy with service work still. But it became, you know, people started giving me pats on the back, you know. People are like, wow, it's so awesome what you young people do and stuff. And I always got a carload of new guys. And, you know, I started thinking, I am the man, you know. It's true. I am a pillar in the young people's AA community. That's right. And then now I'm not doing the service work for the wrong reason. You know what I mean? It's like, who could pack the most new guys in their car, you know? And then I start doing whatever I want, really, you know, especially like in the area of like sex and stuff like that. I'm just kind of, it's like I'm living this double life. I'm doing all the service work and like, you know, trying to be a stand-up AA guy. And then once the meeting's over, I'm doing whatever I want, you know what I mean, with whoever I want and not really caring about whose feelings I'm hurting, stuff like that, you know? And that stuff caught up to me. And it was like I was using AA as like a bank. Like I would do all the service work and stuff. So it's like I'm putting it away over here in the bank. And that way I can do whatever I want and I can just kind of draw off that. And it doesn't work that way. You know, it's amazing that I'm still sober. I remember the first day it hit me is a new guy was outside talking. Somebody was talking to him about acting the same way. And they're like, you can't stay sober that way. And he's like, Dave, that's 5 years. And I was like, oh, you know what I mean? Like, wow. You know, I don't know. But what happened was that stuff caught up to me, you know. It blew up in my face. And it was right around the same time, you know, I was moving out of where I was living. I was moving out to Newport Richey. And all this stuff blew up. And then I was like, I was embarrassed to come to my home group, you know what I mean? And I was angry and resentful at a lot of people. And I hadn't had a program in probably two or three years, you know what I mean? I was showing up. And luckily, you know, I was very connected in AA. I lived with people in AA. And I was here, but I wasn't really here, you know what I mean? I was like, oh, new guys need to do some service work, you know what I mean? So I'll step back a little bit, you know? And then I'm just somebody hanging out. And I remember in the very beginning, my sponsor said, stick with the winners. You know, and I asked him, how do I know who the winners are? And he's like, the winners aren't the guys talking a good game in the meetings. The winners are watch what they do before and after the meeting. You know, see how they really live their lives. You know, and I got a chance to live with my sponsor and a couple other people in AA and see how they really live when, you know, when they're not around the AA meeting, you know. And so I knew how to act. I just wasn't willing to do it at the time. You know, when I was moving out to Newport Richey and on my way out there the day that I was moving, I just lost it, you know. I think I just turned 6 years sober, and I just lost it. I started crying in the car, and I was like, you know what, I'm done. I was like, if I'm going to live this way and be this miserable, I might as well drink, you know. And so I made the conscious decision to drink, but there was a guy following me who I sponsored. Him and his dad were helping me move, and so you know, I was like, I better stop crying before they see me or they're going to know something's wrong, you know what I mean? And I can't let people see me cry. I got an image to maintain, you know. It works really well today. But I get home and we unload the truck and everything. Like, I talked to this guy and he told me about how when he was 7 years sober, he had a gun in his mouth, you know, because the way he was living, he wanted to blow his brains out even sober, you know. And so he kind of talked me off the ledge. I got home. I found a meeting nearby. I went to this meeting. There was like six people there. The first guy to share raised his hand and said he had like 34 years sober. So I was like, awesome. It's not going to be that bad out here. You know, I'm going to hang with this guy after the meeting. Then later on, as he was sharing, he talked about how he never had to work a step in his life and everything's good. And all you got to do is show up at meetings and everything will be okay. And I was like, I'm going to die out here. I'm screwed, you know, like it's over. And you know, but luckily I had a friend, Ryan actually sponsored a guy who lived out there, you know, and he had been out there for like a month, so he knew a bunch of people, and he didn't have a car, so he started picking me up and taking me around, you know. And you know, luckily these relationships have just helped me out like so much in my life, like, you know, with you know, Ryan and Mike, just the way they keep coming back in like a cycle, you know. And like even something so simple like that, like just a guy he sponsored that happened to move out there, and this guy saved my life. He's not even around anymore, you know, but he knew some people, he needed a ride, and so I started taking him around. I found a meeting and they needed a coffee maker, so I was like, I'll do it, you know. I started acting like a new guy, you know. I did the things that people did. I did the things that I did when I first got here, and I wanted to be sober, you know, because I was miserable when I got here. And I remember waking up one day when I was like 6 months sober, you know, and I woke up, and I bounced around a little bit, but I just remember hating life. And then I just woke up one day, and it was sunny out, you know, I could hear the birds outside, and I was like, oh, man, it's Thursday, home groups tonight, awesome. And then I was like, wait, what the hell was that? You know what I mean? Like, I hate AA, you know, so where was I going with that? I wanted that feeling back, because I remember what that felt like, you know what I mean, and how grateful I was. And then there was like a long period of just being grateful and just doing AA because my life was so awesome, you know, and I wanted to give that away to other people. And so I got back into that, you know, and there's a couple guys out there that really like took me under their wing and started taking me around. And even though I had 6 years sober, you know, I was like the new guy, and I saved my life. And you know, I moved back here, and you know, I met, you know, me and Kitty got back together, and, you know, we had a baby, and it was a surprise, you know. We definitely didn't plan it, but it was definitely a game changer, too, you know what I mean? It's just amazing. It was crazy because, you know, I talk about, you know, that day I had that spiritual experience at 30 days sober. It was December 10th. All right, 5 minutes left. I don't want to make Ryan mad, so I got to finish up here. it was November 10th of 2002, you know, and then, you know, my daughter was born December 10th, 2008, you know, exactly 8 years later to the day, you know, and it was just, it was pretty moving for me. I know it probably doesn't make a lot of sense to a lot of people, but for her to be born that day, because it was like the day that I decided I'd stick around, you know. But, you know, and I get to be a dad today. You know, my real dad died when I was 3 years old. And, you know, my mom told me about a lot of the stuff that would happen when I'd be home and stuff like that in front of me and my brother. And, jeez. All right, I'm good. We're going to make it to the end here. You know, my daughter doesn't have to experience that. You know what I mean? She's never seen me drink, and hopefully she never will. And, I have a great relationship with her today, you know, and things today, it's weird thing, you know. I thought life was going a certain way, and then it didn't, and I was pretty angry for a couple days, and then it just worked itself out amazingly, you know what I mean, like something more than I could have definitely asked for. And it's weird how God takes care of me even when I think he's not. I'm like, here he is dangling this carrot in front of my face, and he's like, just kidding, you know what I mean, and then something better even happens, you know, and when I don't think that it will. And, you know, but I don't know. I guess the most important thing I could say is, you know, just keep coming back, you know. If you're new and you don't think this is for you, just keep coming back, you know, because that's what I did, even though I didn't want to. You know, my sponsor just used to say the same thing all the time. Maybe you'll hear something today, you know. And so I kept coming back, and I got active. And at the hardest times of my sobriety, just being active in AA and doing the deal that was taught to me is and reaching out to new guys is what really saved me. You know what I mean? Even though I was doing all that other stuff and, you know, being a scumbag, you know, my sponsor referred to me. I remember calling him, telling him, you know, what was going on. And he was like, well, you're a scumbag, you know, but, you know, you can change. and here's how you do that. You know what I mean? And so it was also pretty funny to me. I remember the day that I found out I was having a daughter. I was like, for a very funny guy. You know what I mean? Very funny. You know, it's like God's like, this is how you want to treat women, huh? Here you go. and it definitely will change your perspective. So, you know, now that I have a little one that I'm trying to raise. So, but, you know, life is really awesome. I've been very grateful the last few days, and I love life and I love AA, and so that's all I got. Thanks.